Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Hi, and welcome to Spark. This is the third episode on the topic of human rights.
In our everyday lives, we take it for granted that we can travel around freely and decide when we want to go to the movies or grocery shopping. But not everyone can do that. People with disabilities often face many limitations. In today's episode, Tanish, you talk to Markus Schäfer, who is involved in looking for ways to overcome these limitations. You met him in Basel.
Yeah, so Markus Schäfer does academic work as a law professor at the University of Basel. He's also a member of the UN Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We met in his office in the Faculty of Law, which is located close to the train station.
So let's listen to the interview.
My name is Markus Schäfer. I'm professor of constitutional and administrative law here in Basel and a member of the UN Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities.
The abolition of the serious injustices to which many people are exposed solely because of their disability is a central concern in your work as professor of law. When did you decide to devote your career to this issue?
That was around 2002, I would say. I've always, during my whole career at the university, starting during my studies already, I focused on human rights and constitutional law. And if you do these things long enough on an academic level, you start to feel the need to do something with a more tangible outcome, with a more clear effects on society, on real people, than just doing academic work. And if you want to do that in the human rights area, you need to focus on something. And if you look at Switzerland as a country and you think about where the most pressing human rights needs are, it's probably in the area of migration, but in migration law there are tons of lawyers. And you have the rights of persons with disabilities. You have about 20% of society that has a disability. It's a much larger number than people usually assume. And for many of them, their disability defines their chances in life and the way they can lead their lives. That's why I decided to put the focus there.
You mentioned about being part of a UN committee. Could you please give us more details about that?
So the UN has 9 main human rights treaties, and each of this treaty has a committee whose task is to monitor the implementation of member states. And the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability has the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Our job is to monitor states in their efforts to implement the convention, to live up to the obligations they incurred with the ratification of the convention.
And how do you think, where does Switzerland stand in this implementation?
It's very difficult to say. Depends on what areas you focus on. I think comparatively, we're doing quite well in public transport. We're doing quite well in social insurance. And we are also doing fairly well with new public buildings. We are not doing very well in the area of the right to live independently. We are not doing very well in psychiatry, in forced measures in psychiatry. There are serious issues with the work environment where hardly anything has been done. So it depends on where you look. In some areas, we have some tangible progress, in others we don't.
Why do you think it is important to install equal rights for persons with disabilities on the international level, for example, with the UN?
Rights of persons with disabilities are human rights, like all the other human rights as well. And it's been the lesson of the Second World War and the developments leading up to it that led the UN and the Council of Europe in the European system and the Organization of American States to develop human rights on an international level. Because if you leave human rights at the disposal of individual countries. Individual countries do bad things to their population. We've seen that, and we're seeing it today. And so it is the idea that lifting individual human rights, and with that, the way a government treats its people onto an international level, taking it out of the shield that sovereignty might provide. And that is the same with human rights of persons with disabilities. All the UN human rights treaties, Council of Europe treaties, American Convention on Human Rights, they all also apply to persons with disabilities. However, it's never worked for them. Large human rights treaties in the UN since 1966, it has not had a tangible impact, positive impact on the lives of persons with disabilities. And that's why there was a need to have a particular convention addressing the specific requirements of persons with disabilities.
So what exactly do you focus your work on?
On the UN level, I'm putting a focus on individual cases. We have at the committee the possibility from 106 countries to file appeals in individual cases against decisions by the highest courts in the country. So I'm in charge of preparing those decisions for our committee. So that's a very lawyerly work. You write like court decisions. I'm also focusing on working methods, which seems like a theoretical issue, which it is not. We've revised, for example, the way we hold our dialogues with states' parties' delegations so as to get as much information out of them as we possibly can. On an academic level, I'm currently focusing on the right of access to justice. It is a provision in the convention that has the purpose of ensuring that persons with disabilities can access administrative procedures, can access court procedures, not just simply physically access a court building, but if you, for example, you're blind, you have your court material available in a format that your screen reader can read. If you're deaf, you have sign language interpretation. If you have a psychosocial disability, you're not being put to strenuous interrogation, things like these. On a practical level, I'm advising several cantons in their efforts to devise a disability rights laws. We've done that with three cantons already in Switzerland. We are now working with the canton of Geneva on such a law. I've been working with the organizations of persons with disabilities in several countries, for example, in Korea. I've done workshops in Korea about how to use individual complaints procedures as organizations of persons with disabilities. I've traveled to Central Asian countries in order to help them implement the convention. I was in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan. So that's the kind of practical work that I'm doing.
You mentioned traveling to Central Asia and helping these governments implement these conventions. Are there any challenges that you face while navigating with governments and multiple entities? You know, like you mentioned the cantons, you mentioned the countries through the UN.
Well, there are challenges like challenges. Yeah. Every job has. You have to be aware of who it is that you're having an interaction with. You interact differently with an organization of persons with disabilities in Kazakhstan than with the Geneva government, of course. And you have to adapt your way of operating depending on the environment within which you operate. But that's part of why it's interesting. You can work on a municipal level, mm-hmm. and you can work on an international level and everything in between. And that's what makes this kind of work very interesting. And at the same time, it's always, in the end, the same questions you're dealing with.
If someone listening is feeling strongly about equality, like you do, should they consider studying law?
I mean, you can study anything. In any field, you can think about what it means for people, what you're doing. If you have the sense that you want to work with people, then studying law makes sense. When I had to decide what to study, my two choices at the end were physics or law. And I decided for law because you can interact with people on a daily basis. You can directly deal with the needs, the requirements of people in their lives.
So how does disability affect people's involvement in culture and society?
If you live in an institution and you do not have the possibility of getting subsidized transport to a cultural event, you cannot participate, because then you stay in your institution, first thing. And that's a reality for many people in institutions. Usually, cantons have rules that maybe provide you with a subsidized possibility of transport maybe 5 times a month, back and forth. So this is a serious infringement on what you can do with your life. We all take it for granted that we can travel to the next city as often basically as we want to. That is not true for many people with disabilities, and particularly for people with disabilities in institutions. And then you have all sorts of obstacles you have to overcome. Maybe you have to have an assistant with you to accompany you, but you don't have that assistant because nobody provides you with that assistant. Or you actually get to a place where a cultural event takes place, but the most basic thing is you can't access it physically. Or maybe you can access, but you don't understand anything because there's no sign language interpretation. And if you live in an institution, maybe you can't go because you can't get back home early enough. It's these simple things that we don't think happen. But that's just the regular daily experience of many persons with disabilities.
You mentioned about assistance and accessibility to public infrastructure. Mm-hmm. About the assistance topic and assisted living, do you think it's the government's responsibility to provide these facilities for people with disabilities, or are they above that they have to be done by private?
I think it's beyond question, mm-hmm, that it is one of the basic functions of society to provide for a decent living environment for people who do not have the financial means to do that themselves. That is not confined to disability. That is true in general. So now the difference that we do have is how living arrangements look like actually in practice. And what we have with persons with disabilities, we have a long history of persons with disabilities being in institutions. We have in Switzerland about 150,000 people with disabilities in institutions. Now, what does that mean? That means that is usually the only place you can live with a certain disability and without possibilities of your parents were rich or something. And that means you cannot decide with whom you have breakfast, for example, who sits at the breakfast table, something we all take for granted. But people with disabilities in institutions can't do that. They can't decide on what they have when they get up, because you have a time when there's breakfast. Maybe if you're lucky, you have a range. You might not be able to decide on your own who's your support services, but that's just the person who's there. So most intimate things, who does that with your body? You cannot decide on your own. So it's very often a life that is largely devoid of the possibility of deciding on your own how to live your life, how to do even your regular daily activities. And so that is why the UN Convention and the committee is strongly against keeping institutions.
What do you think are some measures that can change that?
What the convention requires is community-based support services that allow persons with disabilities to live like everybody else live, in areas where everybody else lives. And not in an institution, in a building that only houses persons with disabilities. And that's not what the convention requires. The convention requires the support measures necessary that allow persons with disabilities to live in an apartment, to live where everybody else lives, so that you don't have a segregated society. Segregation, we've come to realize, is not something that conforms with human rights. But we have not applied that principle to persons with disabilities. Persons with disabilities in many areas live in segregated areas of society, in their living arrangement in institutions, in segregated schools, in the work environment where they have a segregated work environment. So it's something that is prevalent still, even though we've realized that segregating people based on the color of their skin is not a good idea. Segregating people based on their sex or their gender is not a good idea, and so on.
So in order to get there, in order to reach the goals of the convention, what do we have to do in Switzerland?
So there are certain steps being taken by the federal government and the cantons. And what is needed is we need to have a strategy of how to build community-based support services, figuring out what they must look like, what services they need to provide, and then a strategy on how to move from today's institutions to community-based living with the help of these support services. So it's a process that doesn't take just a few years. It's a long-term project. And we don't have yet the expertise to specifically know what support services we need, because every type of impairment needs a different type of support. We need to get the knowledge, to do the research, to develop the services, and to develop the mechanisms to transform from institutions to community-based living. In theory, it would be the government's obligation to develop these strategies, to fund the kind of research necessary. What we see, however, in the area of the rights of persons with disabilities, the governments are usually very slow and very reluctant to really move forward. And they don't do it on their own. It requires the constant lobbying, constant pressure, constant creation of publicity by organizations of persons with disabilities to get the government to move.
Why do you think that is? Is it because of social stigma, or is it some other thing that's causing it to be so sluggish?
I have the impression that one of the fundamental problems that we face is that there are many stereotypes about persons with disabilities, preconceptions about what persons with disabilities can, what they cannot, who they are, how they need to be treated. And in order to implement the convention, you need to get rid of those stereotypes. You need to get rid of those preconceived notions and concepts. And that requires push from the side of organizations of persons with disabilities, because most people still live with these concepts, with these stereotypes, and have a hard time getting rid of them. Just think about the current discussion about inclusive education. Now it's moving backwards now that the Free Democrats took over the position, we don't want inclusive education, it's bad for the students. It's rubbish, but this is the old system. We know the old system, and because we know it, we think it's good. And they don't realize how bad it is for many persons with disabilities, for many children with disabilities. For example, deaf children in Switzerland have a very difficult time to get a good education. If you're born deaf, your chances to succeed in life severely diminished simply because our education system doesn't know how to deal with them. There are other education systems like Denmark who's doing a way better job. We would have the examples. We would have to look and see how we could adapt it to Switzerland. But our notions about what persons with disabilities are, our stereotypes, keep us from taking these steps and making these efforts.
How do you think these stereotypes get flown? Does it come from the parents, from society, from school?
Our society has always been constructed around persons without disabilities, at least since industrialization. And it permeates our society. It permeates the way we think, the way we perceive persons with disabilities, the way we think they're being treated well. We've grown accustomed to thinking we need to take care of persons with disabilities. They need our protection. We haven't grown accustomed to thinking about them as just regular people. They're different somehow. It's not anybody's fault. It is a structural issue.
So basically, what keeps you going in this field?
We all have some work. We all have a job. Unless we have a disability and because of that we don't have a job, which is often the case. So we're lucky and we have a job. And everybody can ask themselves, why do I do the job I'm doing? For me, at the university, this is certainly the best place for me to be, to do academic research and then extend that type of work on a practical level. And the university provides you with an enormous amount of flexibility to combine these things. So it's, I'd say motivation, what keeps you going is just a regular motivation while you do a job.
So thank you for your time and your valuable feedback to us.
And thanks for the questions. Thanks for having me on the podcast. It's been a great pleasure to do this. Thanks a lot.
I'm surprised to learn that disabilities affect so many people, 20% of the population, so even though we might not be aware of it in our everyday lives. And also hearing about the social stigma and its role in the integration of people with disabilities in society was very interesting. I think that changing those perceptions is just as important as changing the laws, actually.
The interview also made it clear that legal instruments like the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities are crucial, but they're not really automatic solution. Implementation requires constant pressure, advocacy, and ongoing dialogue between government, society, and international bodies.
I think this thinking in stereotypes were a topic in all of the three interviews, and they really seem to play a big role in how we can implement a change in society and in the end really make sure that human rights count for everyone.
In order to achieve this, many different perspectives have to be taken and many different stakeholders have to be connected and convinced.
In my opinion, this is what makes working with human rights a very diverse and multifaceted field. And it sounds challenging, but also at the same time, very rewarding. What I saw with all the interviewees is that they showed great passion for their fight, for making a society greater as a whole.
Coming back to the question that we raised earlier, is it necessary to study law to work in human rights? The answer is no, but having a basic fundamental understanding of the legal framework helps. What is most important is the interest to connect and work with people.
At the very beginning of this series on human rights, we raised a question on who actually defines those rights. And we learned in these three episodes that it is actually lawyers and legal experts such as Stefan Schlegel, Erika Schlappi and Markus Schäfer who have to work on the interpretation of these human rights, advocate for their implementation and bring society further as a whole.
Thank you for being part of this series of episodes on human rights.
For the moment, this is the last series of the Spark podcast. Check out our other series on climate change, artificial intelligence, and the effect of social media on democracy. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Spark. Stories from Advocates for Global Change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel and Tanis Schindl. Produced by the Podcast Media.